Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
North Carolina's infamous HB2 discrimination law was deleted from the state's statute books back in 2017, but unfortunately, a lot of unfair laws remain. North Carolina is, for instance, the only state in the nation that prevents individuals in same-sex relationships from obtaining domestic violence protection orders. Earlier this week, News and Views producer Clayton Henkel sat down with one of our state's top civil rights lawyers, ACLU of North Carolina legal director Chris Brook, to learn more about his efforts to push back against this discrimination.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for being back with us on News and Views. Great to see you.
Great to see you as well. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, same-sex couples in North Carolina, they won the freedom to marry. It's been about 5 years now, but the ACLU of North Carolina recently pointed out that LGBTQ people continue to be denied equal protection when it comes to protection against domestic violence. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. We are now the only state in the United States that in any way considers someone's sexual orientation when we're deciding whether you should have access to a domestic violence protective order. Here in North Carolina, if you are an individual who's in a same-sex dating relationship where you haven't lived with the individual that you're dating, you cannot get a domestic violence protective order, which is oftentimes called a 50B. We're fortunate enough to represent a very brave, courageous client who was denied a 50B. And she was denied a 50B not because anyone doubts that domestic violence occurred. Everyone, including the defendant in the case, agreed that domestic violence had occurred. She was turned down just because she was a woman in a dating relationship with another woman who she had never lived with. And that is obviously, from our standpoint, unconstitutional as a deprivation of equal protection, but also due process. But from a policy standpoint, DVPOs, domestic violence protective orders, are so valuable at keeping bad situations from becoming much, much worse. They do things like limit an abuser's access to firearms, so can keep a situation from becoming a deadly situation. There's no good reason in 2019 to in any way consider someone's sexual orientation when you're weighing whether they should have the best protection possible from really grave violence.
It's really no small matter. I think you noted that there are more than 150,000 cases of North Carolinians involved in domestic violence. This was 2014 stats from the Department of Justice, but some of those people get protection and some of those people don't get protection under what you're describing.
Yeah, it's an epidemic and it's a huge problem. And as a state, we've made progress in regards to addressing domestic violence protective orders over recent generations, identifying that domestic violence is a problem, putting domestic violence protective orders in place to help address that problem. But it's still far too common. I believe that in a recent year, there were 76 murders, homicides that arose out of domestic violence circumstances. And, unfortunately, statutes like this sort of perpetuate antiquated notions about what domestic violence looks like. And of course, there are instances where that manifests itself as men abusing women. But one of the things that we brought forward to the court, the North Carolina Court of Appeals, when we made this filing earlier this week, is that the LGBTQ community experiences domestic violence at similar, if not greater, rates, that gay men and gay women similarly experience domestic violence at similar rates and oftentimes don't have similar resources to push back against that domestic violence, to be able to move themselves into a safer situation. And part of that is absolutely the lack of access to DVPOs, which can really be a godsend in difficult situations.
And I believe the judge in the case may have been sympathetic to your client, but the way the law is structured really couldn't do anything. Sympathy only goes so far.
Both trial court judges who heard this case here in Wake County, we should note that as well. It's happening in Wake County, a relatively progressive county, were very, very clear that this was domestic violence. And had our client been a man dating a woman or had been a woman dating a man, that she would have been entitled to a domestic violence protective order under these circumstances, but highlighted that this law, as applied to folks in same-sex dating relationships, simply did not allow for the protections that our client needed to be extended under these circumstances. And I think that's, you know, why you saw members of law enforcement step forward earlier this month and say, listen, the law really needs to catch up to the times. There's no good reason. And in fact, the opposite, it undermines the domestic violence protective order regime by excluding North Carolinians who are really facing grave threats like our client.
And I imagine that if you are an LGBTQ individual and you read the story, you might not be inclined to report anything like this if you feel that there's no protection for you.
That's right. And this is certainly not the first circumstance that we've heard about this situation. But there is knowledge within the LGBTQ community that these sorts of protections do not fully extend to them. These are folks who are already in difficult circumstances. So it really is, I want to highlight again, very brave and courageous for our client to say, listen, I'm going to step forward and make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone else in the same way that it happened to me. And that instead of there being an artificial barrier to protection, we just look at whether an individual needs protection and give it if it's necessary.
Where does the case go from here? I know that Attorney General Josh Stein is seeking to have the law overturned, as is the ACLU of North Carolina. What happens next?
We had a wonderful group of what are called amicus briefs, you know, friend of the court briefs that were filed in support of our client. You mentioned the Attorney General, Equality North Carolina, and a number of other LGBTQ advocacy groups filed an amicus brief. The North Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence and other organizations that push back against domestic violence in our state filed an amicus brief. Those briefs went in earlier this month. A briefing will conclude probably later this winter, perhaps early in the spring, and then this will be teed up either for oral argument or for decision by the North Carolina Court of Appeals. We think that this is a simple case of an individual in North Carolina being deprived of equal protection under the law. Therefore, that should be unconstitutional and should be struck down. But as you referenced, you know, 5 years after marriage equality came to North Carolina, this is not the only instance where our statutes are set out such that they offer protection for straight folks, but perhaps not equal protection for the LGBT community or folks who are in same-sex relationships. And that's something that we're very mindful of, and we want to play a part in helping to address in the days and months to come.
If the courts give a positive ruling, does it then have to go back to the General Assembly that they have to rewrite the law?
You know, it depends, you know, not to get too far into the weeds here, Clayton, but you're forcing me to legal dork out here, and you know that I hate to do that. We believe this is an as-applied challenge, which means that the statute actually works for most folks in North Carolina. It works for folks in opposite-sex relationships. We don't believe that the statute has to be struck down or rewritten or go back to the legislature. There just needs to be a ruling that says excluding folks in same-sex dating relationships from the protections of the DVPO regime is unconstitutional, and they have to be allowed to get those 50B protective orders going forward. That's what the South Carolina Supreme Court held back in 2017 when there was a very similar case here. And I mean, we should consider that for a second. At the beginning of this decade, I believe there were 46 states that were completely and totally equal and in regards to access to DVPOs or their domestic violence protective order regime. Montana in 2013 legislatively fixed an exclusion that impacted the LGBTQ community in their state. Louisiana in 2017 did so via their legislature as well. And South Carolina Supreme Court struck down a very similar exclusion in 2017. You know, states that are not necessarily deep blue states, but very red states, have seen this as a problem and know that there's no good reason to exclude the LGBT community from these protections and have taken steps to address that inequality.
Okay, well, hopefully North Carolina will get it right in 2019. The legislature is back for their long session this year. It's another chance to revisit, shall we say, House Bill 2 and the replacement bill, House Bill 142. Does it surprise you that this legislation that was signed by then-Governor Pat McCrory continues to cost North Carolina?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, because what was the case when HB2 was first considered, what led Charlotte to adopt their anti-discrimination ordinance, is that those sorts of anti-discrimination ordinances are business best practices in the 21st century. And the inverse of that is that saying that your state is going to discriminate or against the LGBTQ community or make it harder for local protections to be adopted for the LGBTQ community is a really good way of telling businesses who want to ensure that they're able to attract and retain the best talent. It's the best great way of telling those businesses that, you know, you really shouldn't be resettling in North Carolina. You shouldn't be bringing your jobs to North Carolina. We saw it recently with the, I believe it was a Netflix series, the OBX series, you know, that's about the Outer Banks that is going to be filming in South Carolina. And if you're a North Carolinian like me, I mean, how galling is it that a show about the Outer Banks is being filmed in South Carolina? But also, how galling is it that South Carolina really has the better argument as a progressive and LGBTQ-friendly state than North Carolina, which has really been a progressive beacon for so many decades here in the South? So no, it doesn't surprise me. It's unfortunate. You know, if we were interested in having a 21st century economy and interested in having a business-friendly community here in North Carolina, we would not only repeal HB 142, which retained some of the problematic provisions from HB2, but we would adopt full-scale employment, housing, and other protections for the LGBT community to ensure equal treatment here in North Carolina.
It's a long session, and so there's a lot of opportunity to do these things you're talking about. And of course, with lawmakers back in session, listeners, they may want to share their thoughts with elected officials, only to find out, unfortunately, that they're blocked on Facebook. So I'm going to ask you about a ruling that came out of the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals recently. It was an important ruling as it relates to public officials and their efforts to sort of wall themselves off from their critics. Tell us about that.
Well, this was a situation where you had a Virginia local county board member who had set up a Facebook page and had set up a Facebook page explicitly and overtly for the purpose of essentially having sort of a digital forum for discussion about the key issues facing the county that she represented. And as is too often the case, she was fully willing to allow her Facebook page to foster that dialogue so long as the dialogue sort of followed her script. And someone was critical of some of the county's decisions, questioned whether there were corrupt motives behind some of those decisions. And she removed those posts from her Facebook page and blocked that individual from further commenting on her Facebook page. You know, if we think about it this way, we would all know that if we went to a county meeting and somebody during the public comment session stood up and said, I question you about this and I don't think this is right. And if the board said, you know, stop, you have to stop talking right now. But not only that, we're removing you from this meeting and you can't come back and comment at this meeting. We would all know that that is wrong. And this is really just sort of the 21st century example of something exactly like that occurring online. And let me tell you something. We get hundreds of intakes in any quarter at ACLU of North Carolina. This is something we get tons of intakes in regards to people being blocked on Facebook, people being blocked on Twitter. We obviously saw the president blocking some people who had been critical of him via Twitter. Here's the thing. If you're going to open up a Facebook page or Twitter account to have dialogue as a government official, you're not allowed to only uplift and allow supportive dialogue through those means. You got to take sort of the rough and tumble along with the laudatory.
Fascinating outcome to that case. I would urge our listeners to go to your website, acluofnorthcarolina.org, to learn more about recent civil rights victories in the past year. Chris Brook is the legal director for the ACLU of North Carolina. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Clayton. Really appreciate it.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.